All right, Buzz.
Thank you. My question is this: in the everyday living and working and making decisions, and such, I've heard you say you test the spirit, say in making decisions. And my question is actually, what do you mean by the spirit at that time, and how do you test it?
Well, in the first place, I don't know that I specifically applied it to everyday living, but it is applied in that sense. Particularly, it is applied when you are meditating and when you are in the higher spiritual experiences. Because as the soul ascends a spinal stairway, it is buffeted about between the forces of good and evil. Now, in our ordinary living, everyday living, we're not aware of the fact that this buffeting is going on, although sometimes we are. Like if we come in contact with enmity, we know very well that we've contacted something or somebody that is giving us a little difficulty. And it is up to us to determine our action and our reaction, isn't it? And first, of course, the reaction is very important, because in accordance with the reaction that comes forth from us will sometimes determine the action. And it is these particular instances which give us the opportunity for self-control. Because many people will needle you, for instance. They will deliberately set out to antagonize you, to needle you. Why do they do this? They have various reasons. Some people just want to be smart aleck. Some people resent what you are, what you believe in, or what you do. And so they deliberately set out to needle you. And so you can react in one of many ways. You can be self-controlled and can handle yourself in the situation and be gentle with them, explain these things to them. You can become angry. You can stop them. You can do these things many ways. So we're constantly dealing with these two spirits. And we call them spirits because one is evil and one is good. Now, Jesus, the Son of Man, we know, resides in the heart and the consciousness of every single individual. He is the Savior of every man. That one who, through your conscience in the beginning, because you have been taught the difference between right and wrong, leads you, guides you, directs you, or attempts to do so, if you deliberately set up your will against what you feel inside, which is termed your conscience, then you are deliberately listening to the wrong spirit in everyday life, aren't you? Isn't that so? If you deliberately do the wrong thing, set up your will and do the wrong thing when you know something is right, then you are going against what your conscience, what your inner dictates tell you. That still small voice, is that not true?
Yeah.
So, in everyday living, we deal with these two spirits. And we're constantly involved with them because, as we've talked about before, we never are in the position of not making a decision, of either doing this or that, of thinking this or that, of saying this or that. And for every single incident of our life with which we're confronted, with every single experience, we have this choice. We can either measure up and go in the right direction and become masters of ourselves, or we can deliberately go in the wrong direction. We can go because of stubbornness. We can go because of ignorance. We can go because we just plain have desires and this is the way we want to go. Isn't that so?
Yes, but isn't it true that in many cases what may be good for one or right for one isn't necessarily right for the other and vice versa?
Well, but we have been given moral standards. Now, you can commit an awful lot of sins under that heading, can't you? Because this is true in the final analysis, perhaps. But in the meantime, under the moral law, before you have attained your spiritual enlightenment, there have been a set of rules and regulations set down for us in the Bible. They were given to Moses, and they are the Ten Commandments. We have also been told in many places in the Bible how we are to conduct ourselves in our everyday living, and is very broadly covered. Now, if we deliberately go against those things and commit sin or separation from God in the sense that we go away from God and not toward Him, perhaps that experience is needed. It wouldn't have been needed if the individual had done what he knew to be right and what he'd been taught. But if he failed to do these things, if he failed to recognize it, either through ignorance or deliberate action against the laws which he knew were right, then he is going to eventually pay the penalty for that. So when we say something is right for an individual in that sense, it must have been right that he had the experience in order that he suffer enough, which he brings upon himself, to bring himself to final realization. But this doesn't mean that every act which is evil is wrong for some person, and yet for others it would be right, because there is this definite set of laws which have been handed down to us. This is religion under the moral law. Now, when you attain to the higher degrees of spiritual consciousness, you meet many different experiences. As a matter of fact, our whole government today and all of the civil and social laws which we have are based upon the Ten Commandments. So we as individuals and Christians, or whatever our faith might be, because this applies to the followers of all scriptures, must conform with the code of spiritual laws, of moral laws, which have been laid down for us. And if we digress from that, it is not right. And therefore, we ourselves punish ourselves. But the difficulty is, then in insisting on doing our own will in this connection, many times the people who are involved with us also are punished, because they're taken along and made to suffer with us because we have committed something that is wrong, some act that is wrong. Now, when you get into the higher levels of spiritual consciousness and you start to meditate, you are indeed high on the path when you attained the degree of spiritual consciousness which gives you the knowledge, the technique of meditation, of directly going and finding God within yourself, where the scripture tells us he is to be found. And as you go into meditation, you will have perhaps many experiences, and perhaps you will have none in the beginning. But you must persevere until the end, because it is the mind, it is the body, which is constantly restless, and it doesn't want to behave. And you can take the position of either letting it be the master, or you persevere until you become the master. There are many people who sit down and they say, I am not, and the Buddha was one of them, I'm not going to move from this spot until I get enlightenment. You see? Now, when you go on the path that is described in the Bible, St. Matthew, which Jesus described very graphically about this way of the cross, which is your own body. And when you get to the higher states of consciousness, your consciousness goes up the spinal stairway, and it stops at each particular spinal center or chakra, as the Hindus call it. And in each center, there are two forces. Now, as I explained before, the Hindus call them the Devas, which are the angels, and the Asuras, which are the demons. We call them the angels and the demons. But there are these two powers in each spinal center, and there are seven centers, which makes the 14 stations of the cross. And Jesus, the Savior within every man, must go up this spinal stairway between these two powers. He is the Savior of man, but he knows that he must be crucified in order that the Christ might be born, because he said, Father, if it be thy will, save me from this hour, but it was from this, take this cup from my lip, but it was but for this hour that I came, because he knows that the human ego must go if the oneness with God is to be attained. Now, when you get in that state, each one has his or her own specific and particular experience in accordance with their past karma and the destiny which they are to fulfill, and also the pattern of their life in this particular incarnation. And when you come to this state, it's very different than anything that you have ever experienced, and the only thing that you can do is to hang on to God alone, because you are buffeted about, you are literally nailed to your cross. In other words, you cannot move on your cross because these two forces are there. This is the Battle of Armageddon that's going on. And these two forces are fighting over the individual soul, one trying to take it to God and the other one trying to keep it from going to God. And they operate equally. Now, Jesus, the Savior within you, tries to listen to the voice of God. He tests the spirits as they come. And the evil spirit comes and tries to tempt, and sometimes it even takes on the guise of God. And then the good spirit comes and lifts you up. And so you listen to both of them, and you hang on to God. And with everything that you've got in you, because you're in the midst of such a terrible battle, you try to get your proper direction. But sometimes you slip, and it indicates that in the Bible where it says Jesus fell. You don't always make it, no matter how hard you try. And that's why you should test each spirit as it comes in the spiritual sense, to try with everything you've got in you to get the right direction on your way to God as your consciousness ascends the spinal stairway. It's vitally important. Now, this is the higher teaching, and in everyday living, the same thing is true. Because particularly we who are on the higher spiritual path know the difference between right and wrong. These things have been laid down for us very graphically in the Bible. And if you will pick up your Bible and you will study a chapter of it every night, you will find all of the directions. You will find the do's and the don'ts. The yama and the niyama, as the Hindus call it, which is the first step of the eightfold path. There are definite don'ts that we shouldn't do. There are definite do's that we should do. Now, the reason for that is not to penalize us, not to work a hardship on us, but to teach us to work in harmony with God's law, not for punishment, but that we may find peace and happiness and eternal joy instead of the pseudo type of thing that we have learned to think gives us satisfaction, and it never does. Because, for instance, if you indulge in some of the things of the senses, that I don't care which sense you take, you satisfy your desires. Maybe you're satisfied for the moment and you get pleasure out of it. But does it last? Do you have actual bliss inside of yourself? Do you have peace? Do you have happiness? Do you have something which you can hang on to from then on? Or is that but the means to whet your appetite for an even greater desire, which in turn will still not give you satisfaction? Because satisfaction, eternal happiness, peace, and joy are only to be found through God realization in the bliss of God. There is no substitute for the right path. You must choose it. And we say what is right for one is not right for another. Well, this applies in many, many ways in our everyday life. Because why? Each of us are geared differently. Each of us come with a separate and distinct state of consciousness. There are not two people in this universe who are at exactly the same state at the same time. Generally speaking, they may be. You understand? But individually, no. So it depends on what they are doing. It depends on their environment. It depends on their spiritual development and all the rest of these things. But you've got to make a line of demarcation someplace, because the world would go wild if you didn't. Because somebody doesn't agree with you doesn't make you right. Because you don't agree with somebody else doesn't make you wrong. And it is through going through these dual concepts of going through the experiences which we bring upon ourselves through our own free choice of either using or misusing our own will, that finally the sloughing away of the human ego takes place, and sometimes it takes a pickaxe to do it. You really have to chisel, because it's like stone, it doesn't want to budge. And this ego has to go. It cannot be satisfied and still get God realization. Now, you've got to make a choice there. As it says very clearly and distinctly in the Bible, you cannot serve God and mammon too. You cannot satisfy your human selfish desires and expect to get God realization. It just will not work. You've got to have total surrender to God, because God realization is the pearl of great price, and it is not bought for one farthing less than the full price. And for every step of spiritual advancement you get, for every realization and revelation that you get, you pay a price physically and mentally and spiritually for it. For every revelation that I have ever given to you, I have suffered for. I have paid a price for. It didn't come to me just as a gift of God. God's grace is flowing upon us all of the time. It is like the sun that shines in the heavens. And it shines equally on all. It doesn't say, I'm going to shine on this one and I'm not going to shine on that one. It shines equally on all. But it is our fault and not God's that we cannot feel the grace of God, because we close all of our doors and our windows, and we don't like let His light and His love come in. What is meant by grace? Grace is a gift of the love of God. When we say His grace descends upon us, we feel the joy of our oneness with Him. It's a special something, and it transcends any satisfaction that you can get in the human sense. Anyone, I don't care what it is. It transcends every human experience, because you feel this joy, this happiness, this light, this divinity within yourself. That is an experience that surpasses anything that you have ever even dreamed about. And having once tasted that, you are never satisfied until you get it eternally for your own. But that's only the beginning when you taste it. It is like Christ who was transfigured on the cross. This happened before the crucifixion, mind you. It happened after His tempting in the wilderness, when He said, Satan, get thee behind me. And He had three disciples there. And they went up in the mountain and they saw Jesus transfigured. And He had with Him Peter, and Peter represents truth. And He had with Him James, who is a supplanter, or that which supplants the real or the divine. It is, in fact, the human ego. And He had John. And John, again, we know, is the witness. It is that which witnesses the truth happening in oneself. It is the intuitive faculty that knows the truth. And as these three disciples witnessed, they saw Jesus transfigured on the mountain, and they saw Him speaking with Moses and Elias. Now, Moses represents the law, and Elias is Jehovah or God. And so we have something very unusual, very wonderful, in what is given in this transfiguration, because this is the event that comes to every individual when they meditate. They determine that they're going to find God within themselves, and all of a sudden the light of God comes to them. They're in a blaze of glory, and they see themselves as they really are. With a woman, she sees herself perhaps as the Divine Mother. With a man, he sees himself transfigured as the Lord. But it is a blaze of glory. And this blaze comes to you. What for? What from? What makes it happen? Through your utter surrender and sincere desire to leave no stone unturned until you find God within yourself. But having once reached that divinity, having once become one with that which is your true self, this is just the beginning. Because this is given, mind you, in, I think it's the 17th chapter of Matthew. And Jesus went through all of these other experiences afterward. He explored the depths of his being. He was put through all of these tests. And then finally he went through the crucifixion. Then he descended into the hell of his own being. Or he was in the sepulcher for three separate days, during which time, the first day, his consciousness was, and a day is only symbolic, as I've explained before, of a period of time. And his consciousness is released from the physical body. And the second day it is released from the electrical or the astral body, and the third day from the causal or the idea body. Then, what happens? The sepulcher, or the tomb, which is the heart on the fourth spinal center, opens, and Christ arises from the dead. He has been dead. He's been going through all sorts of experiences. He's been going through purgatory, which means the purging of the soul of all that is not pure. This is this time, the state of purgation. Then he appears to his disciples, or the 12 powers within him, and he gives them the power of the Holy Ghost. This power is a tremendous thing which permeates your whole being. And then gradually, just as gradually as he descended into hell, it takes him 3 days to ascend into heaven, or three separate states of time, because he has three spinal centers above the heart center. You see? And then he becomes one with his Father and sits at his right hand. It is up to us which spirit we want to listen to. We have this choice constantly. And we know the difference between right and wrong. And it's given, as I say, very specifically and definitely in the Bible. And I think that it's a good thing, as we come here week after week, for each of us, every night we should be doing this anyway, to read a few verses out of the Bible and to memorize them, to meditate upon them. And for each one to pick out that one verse which appeals to them, and to bring it up for conversation. We can't cover them all each time, but we should familiarize ourselves with the Bible, because it gives the whole pattern for living in there. If we will study this Bible, we will see that certainly it is the story of the evolution of man in his ascent from the animal state in which he first finds himself wanting to give in to all of his animal desires, as he attains the highest in his humanness. When his face turns to God and he wants only to go to God, and he puts his foot on the path like Saul was going away from God, denouncing him, doing all the things he shouldn't, and the Christ appeared to him on the road to Damascus, and then thereafter he was a changed man, and he took the name of Paul, or the little one, or the new one on the path, because then he was spiritually inclined. And gradually you become more and more spiritual. You want to do the right thing. The desire for all of enjoying the things of the worldly pleasures gradually leave you. And you have no desire but to find your oneness with God. You want to come to church. You want to be with spiritual people. You want to do good. You want to love people and serve people. And gradually you come to know that it is not people that you must serve, but God in people. Because he is everywhere equally present. And your heart is filled with the love of God and with the love of your fellow man. And you feel a kinship with all of them, a brotherhood with all of them. But we're taught balance. And we must keep our awareness right up until the end. Because if we don't keep that awareness, we can't keep our balance. And the reason we keep awareness is that we may be aware of the difference between good and evil. While these two twins exist, we can't follow evil and expect to attain God. Because evil is that which takes us away from God. It is that which opposes. It is said that the word Satan purely and simply means adversary, or that which opposes. The opposition comes because that force wants to keep us out into the world. And so, therefore, certainly we shouldn't follow it. We should follow the good force, which wants to take us to God. They are both thieves on our cross, because both of them, because they are the twins, still keep us from our oneness with God. But the good thief, the magnetic force within us, is the one that takes us to paradise. That one is the one that goes with the Christ to paradise, when finally he makes the state of transition from the Son of Man to the Son of God. So there can be no question of right or wrong, or the difference in what is right for one is wrong for somebody else, and vice versa. We must follow these laws, which are laid down for us in the Ten Commandments, and there are many lesser laws they laid down. And this is also in the Hindu scriptures, as I say, under the heading of Yama and Niyama, or the things that you must do and the things that you must avoid doing. And if we are smart, if we really have our own good at heart, there will be no desire in us to do anything but that which is right within us, and to follow that which is in harmony with God's laws, because only in that way will we ever develop to the highest and fullest of which we are capable in all facets of our existence. The truly successful individual today is not the individual who has gained a high position or who has made a lot of money. The truly successful person is the individual who has mastered himself. Remember that Jesus said, when the disciples were arguing among themselves as to who was going to be the greatest, "He who would be greatest among you must be the servant of all." This indicates that we must have humility. It indicates that we must have kindness and compassion and sympathy and understanding, no matter how much we are tested. And believe me, we are tested sometimes, and I know it, and you know it. This is true. And this force takes hold of us because of something or someone who has disturbed our peace, who has shaken us to our roots, and this comes as a test. Are you going to fight back? Are you going to let it affect you? Or are you going to remain peaceful and still and calm in spite of all adversity? The greatest man in the world is the man who is master of himself, who is not the slave of all of his desires. And this takes some doing, believe me, because this has been a habit pattern down through the centuries. It has been a habit pattern with each of us for incarnations. You take the congenital liar. That individual would rather lie than to tell the truth. And they will be tricky. They will get around things in many ways and present something just in order to get information, perhaps, or for reasons unknown but to themselves. And they will try this in many ways. And this is dishonest. They know it is dishonest, but they do it. Why? Because it has become a habit pattern. And even after the individual has changed and gone on the spiritual path, and been there for a long time, every now and then that habit pattern will come to the fore and take hold, and there it is. You've got to be aware of it, because these things break out at the seams every moment of your life. If we are students of truth, then we have to stand for truth. There is no this way and that way. Truth is. It always was, it is, and it always will be. There can be no compromise with truth. There can be no compromise with the principles of truth. We have to speak truth. We have to live truth. We have to be the example of what we say we believe in. Otherwise, why do we even bother to study it? It's just simply lip service. I have a respect. I don't care what the individual says to me. If they will tell me the truth, I will accept it and respect them for it. But if they try to get around something by lying to me, and I find out about it, I have very little respect for them. I might forgive them for it once, but the second time, no. And I will never trust them again. And I think most of us are like that. And yet we go back over and over and over and over again with regard to these things. We are given these teachings to put into practice in our daily lives, not just something to take in for an hour and a half, one day a week, intellectually, and do nothing about. It is like all the people that go to the Orthodox churches. They're good people, sincere people. Some of them go there, and they really go because they want spiritual help and enlightenment. They go and they listen to the truth which is spoken to them. They go and they listen to the gospel, and they go there for the purpose of coming out of there and making their lives better than it was before. And there are others who go there, and they go there to be entertained. They go there so that they might get, material for argument or discussion, something that they can use. What a terrible way to use the truth of God. Isn't this a fact? We are put here to find our oneness with Him, to worship Him, to love Him, to adore Him. He is within us. We want the radiance and the glory and the beauty that we see in a God-realized soul. We want all of these things that we read about, of the great ones who have changed the world, upon whose lives the Scriptures are built. And each one of us is the Bible in ourselves. Each one of us have the Scriptures within us. Are we going to be like the people in the Old Testament and continue on in all of the criminal debauchery that went on in the early days that we read about? This was true in the Hindu Scriptures. It's true in the Christian Scriptures. It's true in all Scriptures. We have come out of that. We're supposed to be an enlightened people. And yet this country today is so criminal in nature that somebody said to me the other day they wondered when in the world God was going to really rain the punishment down upon us. And we have earned it. In every walk of life this is true. We must want God so badly that we are willing to sit, to cry for Him, to beg of Him to reveal Himself until this light comes to us, until we see this transfiguration on our own cross, until we come face to face with our own divinity. And when we do this, truth is present, as it says in the Bible. This is the true meaning of this. And also the supplanter, that ego, which is constantly present, looking on. And also John the Witness, who is the intuitive quality within us. And we see Moses the lawgiver, and we see God there when that transfiguration, because all of these, which are personalized in the Bible, are individual forms within ourselves which witness this oneness with the divinity when we are lifted up. But that, as I say, is the only beginning. Only the beginning. This shows you the gold which you are working for and which you must attain. And you must go the necessary way in order to attain it and keep it on a permanent basis. The way of the cross and the Christ is not an easy one. Nobody ever said it was. It is the pearl of great price in truth. But if we will listen and follow not our own will, but the will of God, we will get this glory. We will be given the keys to the kingdom. You have to apply it every moment of your lives. Now, if you're going to get in there and wage a battle with evil, as I have said, you're in real trouble. And the thing to do is never mind about phenomena. Never mind the experiences that anyone else has. Check these experiences only with your spiritual teacher and no one else. Never mind what anybody else has, because their experience is going to be different than yours, and you cannot take what they have gone through specifically and apply it to your own experiences. You can only take the path as it is laid out in the scriptures, of which I am teaching you the true meaning, and apply it to your own experiences. But don't keep your mind on the experiences, because when you do, you don't have it on God. You've got it on phenomena. You've got it on the way and the path, and it is not accomplishing the purpose that must be accomplished in order that you get this God realization. Now, we've said this over and over and over again. Repeat the name of God. Meditate upon God. You've been given the methods of concentration, and they are tremendous. All of this is described in the Bible. All of yoga, which is union with God, is described in the Bible. Every single thing that is in the Hindu scriptures is given in the Bible. But it is covered up with symbolism. Jesus said to his disciples, "To you it is given to know the truth, but to others in parables." Because the mystical meaning, the truth of it, the nut that is, the kernel that is inside of the shell, is not given to you until your consciousness opens up, your awareness of God opens up. And it comes to you as a revelation out of the heaven of your own being. Remember that it says also in the Bible, "Heaven and earth will pass away, but my word shall not pass away." If heaven and earth are within yourself, this means that this physical body is composed of two elements, two opposites, heaven and earth, and that will pass away. But the word, which is the infinite spirit, the word which was made flesh and dwells among us, which is in every man, will never pass away. That is the individual consciousness, the wave in the ocean which finally becomes the ocean. And the wave and the ocean are not different, but it just laps out and then it recedes, doesn't it? It goes forth and it recedes. And it is just so that human life is. It goes forth and recedes until one day, you want God badly enough that you are willing to give up everything in this world, all your ideas, all of your possessions, everything that you hold dear to yourself, because you know that God is the answer to everything, that He is the dearest thing there is. In fact, He is all that you hold dear. And when you want Him first, and when you get Him first, then it says, all of these other things are added unto you. This applies in all departments of your life. Go to God first. Attain your union with Him. Then you will have the light of the Spirit. You will have everything you want spiritually. All of the truth will be revealed to you, but also all of your physical needs and wants in the way that is right will be given to you. You will never want for anything. Even every slightest wish will be taken care of. I have demonstrated this, the truth of this in my life, and many of you also have. This is the truth. There is no greater gift than God. There is no greater happiness than His grace pouring upon you. And that grace is His love. His supply of the infinite wisdom which comes from His spiritual storehouse of wisdom. That wisdom that is open, that fountainhead of wisdom which is open to the God-realized person at all times. At first it comes spasmodically, because don't forget that John the Baptist, which is the intuitive quality, comes only in the beginning as the stream of water here and there. It flows down, but you, because of the darkness in which you have surrounded your own consciousness, can't always get it, and you struggle to get the truth which is being given to you. And in the beginning, you're not certain whether this is truth because you don't know which spirit is coming. And you wrestle with it, and it's not an easy job. And one time it will tell you one thing, and another time it will tell you another thing. And the only way you can get the truth is to say, God, you must show me. You must show me. And then gradually it just opens up. And when you get it, you know it. Because it's different than this groping. And as I say, it comes spasmodically, but as you work with it, and as the prophecy is fulfilled in a truthful happening, in other words, you prophesy, and then that thing actually comes to pass, and you know the way you felt when you got it. You know the way that you got it. And so you know that this was truth, and you learn to discriminate between that which is true and that which is not. You learn to know that still small voice, and to know that when you get that thing in a certain way, that nobody can dissuade you because this is God speaking to you. And gradually, as your faith in God grows, and your faith in the voice which speaks to you grows, then it becomes a steady thing which you can tap in on at any time. At any time. But as we said last time, when finally we come to the point where the mind must disappear, the human mind, into the cosmic mind of God, then the head of John the Baptist is cut off, or the intuitive quality. And there's only the Christ who is one with God who is left. These are great truths which you are learning. Now, this is symbolism in the Bible, but this is the way it must happen in just plain English, that the human mind must finally disappear. That's why we're taught the method of meditation. That's why we're taught to devote a certain amount of time each day to the meditation upon God. But for one reason, that we will transcend the power of the senses, that we will one day go beyond the mind until the whole being is stilled and the whole being, the whole attention is centered upon God alone. Then all of these senses lose their power and you are lifted up and you have experiences which no human being can describe, nor should they. Do not discuss your spiritual experiences with anybody but your spiritual teacher. Because, as I say, the experience of one is different from the experience of another. And sometimes some souls are tested greatly. And if you know about the experiences which they go, they might frighten you to the extent where you wouldn't want to go through them. But on the other hand, maybe it isn't God's will that you go through these things at all. And yet, because you think that maybe you would go through them, you would retard your progress and you would back away from your God realization. So, go with God. Have faith and trust in your Father. Father, I am under thy divine protection. I and my Father are one. I know that my Father is within me, that he is the light of my being, and that he never leaves me nor forsakes me, and that wherever I go, I take him with me. His rod and his staff, they comfort me. His light and his eternal energy and power, they comfort me. And he will be with me even when I go through the valley of the shadow of death, because death is merely the dissolution, temporarily, of this heaven and earth, which encompasses the living word or the living spirit. My word will not pass away. The word of God is eternal. It is that creative force which he put forth from himself, which created all these universes and worlds and peoples and creatures and things. And it will never pass away. When it is time, he will withdraw all into his bosom. But still it exists. It exists within himself. And when he has rested for a while, then again, according to Hindu scriptures, He sends forth again from himself and goes through this whole play. We are bound to the body, but the one thing we're sure of in this body is that we're going to leave it someday. All of us. But we keep thinking, well, we're different, but we aren't. And so when this body leaves, unless we have made the effort to get that our oneness with that eternal spirit, what has been the purpose of our life? We have wasted it. We have thrown it away. This precious gift, which is so hard to come by. The need for souls to reincarnate on this plane is so great in order that they might continue their spiritual development. That we have, for instance, quintuplets. When the opportunity arises, they all rush to one place and bang, they all make it at the same time. It's true. It's absolutely true. You have quadruplets. You have triplets. You have twins. And the real strong ones say, "Oh, you boys get aside. I'm going in here first." But the number that wait are tremendous. Now, today there is much to say about birth control and self-control. And I remember that someone asked Master one time, "Well, Master, if we all become celibates, what's going to happen to all the souls waiting outside?" He says, "My God." He said, "With the billions," he said, "and the way they carry on, I don't think we need to worry about that. But we on this path have to learn self-control. We have to learn self-control. But you don't do it overnight. And you must go to God in bounds. As I've said before, suppression, repression is not the answer. If these teeming minions that are brought into the earth, and we have some of them right on this continent, down in Mexico, and some in our, that we have seen, that have absolutely nothing. They're living in absolute poverty. We have them in the States here. We have them all over. But we have them particularly in the Far East. In India, it is terrible to see the conditions under which these poor people have to live. Why is this? It is because this is the particular experience which they have earned. And they have earned life to that degree. But don't forget that that India is the cradle of all spiritual knowledge. It is the cradle of all religions. And because of the tremendous extremes there and the great poverty, the great want, today and every day, it is the most spiritual nation on earth, because where else do these people have to go except to God? Now, we're always talking about the demonstrations that come to us as a result of our faith in God. We're always crying when we're hurt humanly, or our ego is injured, or somebody doesn't do things in accordance with the way we feel that they should, and we resent it, we get our feelings hurt, and all the rest of it. You can't, at one and the same time, have your human ego comfortable and at peace. Not that this goes on all the time. But I'm talking about on a steady diet as we would like to feel it. And still get the spiritual development that you want. Because when the human ego, our humanness, is upset, it is that time that we are tested. And we either measure up or we don't measure up. We either overcome or we don't. We grow spiritually or our personality disintegrates and we become a vegetable. And it's up to us to make the choice as to what we want to do. But for every speck of spiritual advancement, we pay for it in some way, humanly. So when these human problems come to you, keep your peace inside and accept them with joy. Try to find out the reason for them. Why are you being tested in this way? Why is this being taken away from you? Because if it's taken away from you humanly, and you overcome and you measure up to the test which has been given to you, then you will get spiritual consciousness and understanding. And you will become a light among men. Let your light so shine that it will reveal your Father which is in heaven and your good works. I've forgotten just the exact quotation, but it is something like this. Because if you try with everything you have to be the utmost of which you are capable in God, there is no doubt but that you will get results. And if you're not getting results, then don't look to conditions, environments, or people outside of yourself, but look within yourself. Because therein lies the fault. And therein must come the change. As I have said to you before, that Sister Genemata said once, Lord, change no circumstance of my life. Change only me. And it gets really rough sometimes. Even to the point where you have gone beyond your ability to consciously control the forces that come at you. And it is at that time that this baptism of blood takes place inside of you. You've consciously controlled. You can't be to blame for it. And yet the opposition opposes you so greatly that this happens inside of you. And blessed indeed is such a one. Blessed indeed. So don't look for trouble. Don't ask for problems and suffering. But when these things come to you, then learn to handle them as true Christians, as soldiers of God, as followers of the truth. And make use of them. Make them work for you. Make them contribute to your spiritual advancement, because you will be given the strength. You will be given the wisdom if you make the effort to handle them, to overcome them, and to find your oneness with God. And none of us will ever find true happiness until we have gone all the way in that direction. None of us. There are no substitutes. You can't say, I will put it off to tomorrow and hope to get it. You can't say, I will enjoy the world and yet I want God and hope to get God. Because you're a house divided against itself. And a house divided against itself cannot stand. It is built upon the sand. Its foundation is not built upon the rock of truth and of strength. Because don't forget that this serpent force that it speaks of so frequently in the Bible is this coiled force in the spine which keeps us separated from our oneness with God, which keeps us working in the consciousness of duality. And only when this electrical force, through our own spiritual desire, love, and worship for God, rises in the spine and pierces the 1,000-petal lotus, so that it is no longer separating us, but there's only the oneness of God. Only when that happens are we free from this world of duality. Only then is our house one. And is not divided against itself. And what is the self that it's divided against? The self of God. That is why the snake is pictured as coiled upon the head of Shiva. Because he is overcome. He is overcome. This is in the symbolism of the East. And that's why the snake. So many people don't understand this strange symbolism that they think. But there's a very definite reason for it. And it talks about the subtle serpent in the field. In the Christian Bible, it's all the way through it. And in the Hindus, it's the Kundalini force. So it is this electrical force of duality, the positive and negative force within us, which keeps us separated from our oneness with God. And so the only way to do it is to keep your consciousness upon Him. Do the things which are laid out for us that help us to work in harmony with God. Love all fellow human beings no matter what they give you. Love God in them. Turn the other cheek 7 times 70. This doesn't mean, as I've said before, that you're a worm or a doormat. You must demand respect, and you don't demand it through asking for it, but by having earned it. And when you have earned it, you will receive it. You don't need to ask for it. Does this answer your question, Liz? Do you have any others? Does anyone else have anything they want to talk about?
Father, what is the, in light of the things you said in recent weeks, what is the inner meaning of the incident where Jesus commanded the storm to be still and walked upon the waters, and where Peter began to walk across the water to meet Jesus and then began to sink, and I believe through his faith it said, ceased sinking, got back on top.
Well, when Jesus walked upon the waters, this again is symbolic. And he stilled the waters. When you're speaking of the waters, you're speaking of this wave of delusion that comes over you. And Jesus has to walk upon that. And Peter, representing the truth, starts to walk upon the waters, but he goes back because the truth is not completely predominant in the individual at that time. And so the truth is not strong in us, the faith is not strong enough in the power of God within you to take you across the waters of delusion. Now Jesus the Christ will walk on the waters, and he can still the tumult within himself because his faith in God is great, even so great that he is willing to go through death in order to get his oneness with God, isn't he? So he has the power to still the waters that of delusion that come up to tempt him to drown in them, doesn't he? And all of the other disciples, which are the 12 powers within you. So he has the power to still that water. And Peter, who represents the truth, starts out to do this. But the truth is not firmly established enough in the individual so that it can do that, you see. It's not willing to cross over. How many among us here, if we were had to face this test, could give up our humanness like that, the human ego, and cross this ocean of samskara, as the Hindus call it, this ocean of delusion, and say, all right, I will give up everything that of my little self this moment. I will cross this river and go on the other side and drown in the ocean of God's love. Never to return, maybe, as a human being. Fully liberated. No bodies, mind you. But the eternal consciousness of God. Can you do it? Can anybody? This takes some doing. But Jesus came to the point where he knew that he had to come to this hour if he was going to attain his oneness with God. And so he knew that he must die in order to do it. And after the transfiguration, he started to talk to his disciples. And he told them that he would go among the people teaching, that he would perform these miracles. And he told of the suffering which he must endure and the final death which he must go through in order to attain his final enlightenment. And even after you have been liberated from the three bodily jars, the consciousness, that is, the individual knowledge of self, which is one with God in bliss, still there are higher light forms to go through for the simple reason that we retain the impression of the last form or forms that we were, and we carry that with us. So even after we have the consciousness has been released from the physical, the mental, or the astral, and the causal, or the idea forms. Still, the idea of form is there, the impression of form, which creates light forms, and even that must be transcended, and then the whole thing is light. The whole being is filled with light. Now, as we've spoken about before, when one goes through an experience, and there are one in millions who attain this, either the body is dropped in 4 days, or it remains for a while and it is dropped, or upon rare occasions, for God's own purpose, such a one is permitted to go back through the different planes of delusion and again operate in human consciousness in the human body, and that one is at once divine and human in that sense. There is nothing but God there, but they must go back in delusion in order to operate in a human form to teach humanity. And it is said that this happens when the world is in the state that it is now. And at every time it has been in such a state, there has been a Messiah who has come, who has given the truth to the people. And after the Messiah has left, the disciples have carried on and they formed an organization and cults and denominations and religious organizations. And they have felt that the spiritual teacher who got the truth of God did not get the complete truth, but they feel that they're better qualified to give it. And therefore they change the scriptures. And it has been changed many times. And then they become, the truth becomes diluted. And the farther you go away from the time that such a one comes, the greater is the state of delusion and the less truth you get. So that those that are there at the time and are able to be in the vicinity and learn the teachings of the truth as it is given through such a one are blessed indeed. And it is through that that this truth must be carried on. And there is always the hope that it will remain as it was given and not be changed. Always. Sometimes it has to happen. Wonderful to see you. I love you. I'm so glad you came. Does this answer your question?
This occurred then previous to the Battle of Armageddon.
Yes.
And the development which this is portraying.
That's right. Because it all came before the crucifixion, didn't it? Because after the crucifixion, then we're taken into the Acts of the Apostles, and then we're taken into the revelation of John, or the intuitive faculty, which shows everything that happened to the Savior as he went through these experiences. It is the very state which I myself have been in, as I have told you, of the experiences which I have gone through, and the intuitive quality has come in and has taught me and told me the truth of that which I have experienced. It's the revelation of John, the witness, who experienced these things and witnessed the truth that happened to Jesus, the Son of Man, who becomes the Christ. You understand? You've been witnessing exactly in the things that I've told you. All of these months and years since this thing has happened, exactly this. Because these are the revelations.